On December 25th, 1991, Mikhail Gorbachev announced that he'd be stepping down as the president of the Soviet Union. His resignation came at a time when the Soviet Union's relations with the world were starting to thaw after years of distrust during the Cold War, especially with the United States. The end of the communist government helped pave the way for the formation of independent governments in new independent countries. Keith Darden joins us now to talk about what happened then and what it means today. He's a professor in the School of International Service at American University, where he focuses on nationalism, state building, and the politics of Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasia. Keith, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the program.
Well, a lot of the response, I think, on this side of things here in the United States was, yay, Soviet Union ends, happy times going forward. The view was more mixed within Russia and the rest of the Soviet Union, wasn't it?
That's exactly right. I think most people in the former Soviet Union separated the ending of communist rule and the Communist Party from the breakup of the Soviet Union. And they were pretty happy about the first part. In other words, they didn't like living under communism, but they didn't necessarily want to see their country break up.
Right. So we ended up with all these new countries or restored countries, Russia, Ukraine, Latvia, Uzbekistan, and the rest. Why did it go that way? Why didn't it stay one Soviet Union without the Soviet part?
Well, part of it was that the leaders of those republics wanted to seize power for themselves. So in particular, Boris Yeltsin, who had become president of Russia, of the Russian Federation, while it was still part of the Soviet Union, had a constant tension with Mikhail Gorbachev, who was the leader of the Soviet Union. And one way to resolve that power dispute was to get rid of the union itself. And so the real way that the Soviet Union ended was by an agreement between Boris Yeltsin, the head of the Russian Federation, and the heads of the Belarusian and Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republics to disband the union and to replace it with a weak and decentralized Commonwealth of Independent States that would make them sovereign rulers.
And all of a sudden, these people were big fish in their smaller ponds. Not small, these are still pretty big countries, but they got to run their own countries, in effect.
Exactly. And, you know, Boris Yeltsin got the biggest pond, and he was a pretty big fish.
Well, I want to start looking at the echoes of what happened 25 years ago on today. Some people were very upset by this breakup of the Soviet Union and saw it as a diminishment of Russian power, Russian prestige in the world. And one of those people was named Vladimir Putin. Can you talk about his path from 1991 to today?
Yeah. So in 1991, Putin was a KGB officer stationed in East Germany, and he witnessed the collapse of the East Bloc firsthand. And when he came back to St. Petersburg, which is where he was from, he worked for the mayor of St. Petersburg, Anatoly Sobchak, who was a Yeltsin ally. But he, you know, if you read Putin's memoirs, he sees the withdrawal of Russia from the international stage, the breakdown of order domestically, as a real consequence of the collapse of communism and the collapse of the Soviet Union. And so while he often says that anyone who doesn't regret the collapse of the Soviet Union has no heart, but anyone who wants it back has no head. I think there are many ways in which he sees the collapse of the Soviet Union as the source of many of Russia's problems today.
And talk about some of Russia's problems today. What kind of things have happened that people view as a decline?
In the Russian government, in this current Russian government, they're primarily concerned about the presence of NATO in former communist territories, its encroachment on former Soviet territories, in particular Ukraine and the Baltic republics, Georgia. And so they see the geopolitical costs of weakness as being very significant, and they seem to genuinely feel threatened by the West. Some of it is certainly ginned up to shore up popular support at home when the economy is declining. But some of it is a genuine concern about U.S. power and the power of NATO getting closer and closer to their borders. And they see that as the main consequence of the Cold War, that they think that the end of the Cold War was misplayed by the leadership of the Soviet Union, by Mikhail Gorbachev, and by Boris Yeltsin. And they're seeking to replay that endgame and redress those wrongs.
So what would that involve? Is the occupation of the Crimea, parts of the Ukraine, is that part of a bigger picture of building those borders back outward?
Yes. So that's exactly what it involves. It involves a a revamping of the Russian military to create expeditionary forces that can be used in the immediate post-Soviet space and also as far away as Syria, revamping the nuclear forces to maintain their nuclear deterrent against the United States. And so we may see more aggressive activity from Russia as it seeks to sort of establish its credibility as a great power in its own neighborhood.
You know, you can make the statement, Western Europe is scared of Russian expansion. The Russians are scared of encirclement by the West. And that statement would be true in the 1800s under a czar, the 1900s under a Communist Party chief, and now in the 2000s under Putin. Can we learn anything that will resolve these tensions from the last couple of centuries?
I think one thing we could learn is that states will act on the basis of what they perceive to be their vital interests, whether we think that is normatively undesirable. In other words, we don't think it's a good thing that Russia annexed Crimea, but we probably could have anticipated it after the government in Kiev was overthrown, and that we should be just more clear-eyed about what countries' perceived intrinsic natural interests are and try to negotiate around those rather than provoking them. I think there's an extent to which we could have avoided the crisis that we're in now. Russia certainly could have avoided putting us in this crisis. But there are things that we in the West could have done, perhaps to have kept Ukraine whole and Europe a little bit more peaceful.
Well, now Donald Trump is the president. He's spoken favorably of Russia and of Vladimir Putin. Is this maybe an opportunity? A lot of people were worried about this. Is this an opportunity to make a more positive step and resolve these differences in a more positive way?
This is the moment of truth. We'll know what Russia we're dealing with under a Trump administration. If Trump is truly conciliatory towards Russia and recognizes the annexation of Crimea and some of the other things that have been bandied about by his team, then if Russia is truly reacting to the West, they'll back down and we'll see a reduction in their provocations, fewer flyovers of their military aircraft over the Baltic states or Sweden and Norway. If, on the other hand, what's been going on for the past few years is that we have been successfully containing Russia from acting even more aggressively in the East, then it's very likely that a conciliatory Trump is going to be essentially taken advantage of, and Russia is going to be able to make moves in Ukraine and in the Baltic states that they never would have been able to do under a previous U.S. president.
We'll leave it there for now, Keith, but I hope you'll join us as these things develop.
Be happy to. Thanks for having me on the show.
That's Keith Darden. He's a professor in the School of International Service at American University, where he focuses on nationalism, state building, and the politics of Russia and neighboring countries. Joins to talk about the end of the Soviet Union and what's happened between now and then, taking us up to today there.